Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Assessing a person's legal matter often requires extensive interviews, review of contracts and documents, and research of the current state of the law on the issues involved. As a result, the information provided by the attorneys and guests of All Things Legal is given for informational purposes only. It is not to be construed as legal, tax, investment, or other professional advice. Communications with the attorneys on this program, whether verbal or digital, do not create an attorney-client relationship.
Good morning. Hour number two, Doug Cinceri, Michelle Demers-Cinceri, my law partner, my wife, All Things Legal. We'll be here till 10 o'clock, and it'll be just sports after us. And so we were, thanks for Renee for his great interview. And I think LSU is going to exceed expectations. And I'm all in for Coach O. We love Coach O.
We've been all in since day one.
Day one, yeah. So we're Coach O family.
We are.
I love the guy. Just as personally, he loves Louisiana. He loves LSU. He's everything that's great about LSU. Coming from cutoff, very humble beginnings.
Yeah, he's got a great heart. You can just tell.
He's got the best heart.
Louisiana and loves what he does.
He's great. He's great for our state. He will succeed.
He will.
He will succeed. All right. We got a couple of texts. You wanna go with the first text?
Sure.
Is this up
sure,
your
sure,
wheelhouse?
Sure. It says, I have joint custody of my children and I am domicile parent. Their mother has not seen them in 785 days as of today. I don't know where she lives and I don't know if she works. I don't know anything. All of a sudden, she decides she wants them for a couple of days. Do I have to let her have them? She has visitation rights every other weekend. She's only talked to them twice on the phone in that period of time. All right, well, that's an interesting question. There's a pragmatic, there's a legal. Legally, if she has a judgment that gives her visitation, unless that judgment has been modified, which it sounds like you had a valid claim to modify it, that under the law she has it. Now, if you withhold it, she does have a right to bring a claim for contempt, but the contempt has to be an intentional, willful violation of a court order. Actually, she's in violation as well. So that's what I'm saying. There's a pragmatic and there's a legal. You know, for me, the question would become, if you don't know where she's going to have the children, you have not had contact with her, you don't know what kind of frame of mind she's in, I think you're justified in not letting them go without getting some kind of
court reunification.
Yeah, and that's a long time. You know, it depends upon the age of the kids. What court are you in? But 785 days for not seeing a parent, for me, that's a reunification issue.
Okay, could you explain what reunification is and how the courts deal with that?
Well, if a parent has been has not had contact with a child in a while, what the experts say is that a reunification process has to take place wherein they are introduced to the parent again. And of course, you know, the reunification process, that's above my pay grade. That's a social issue. But we have experts who are experts in reunification. The courts can order reunification. It just kind of depends on what the situation is, how old the kids are and what was the reason for the split.
And I'll follow up. Let's say a parent has a custody arrangement in place and it's one spouse's time for visitation and the spouse comes over inebriated. There's justification for not complying with the schedule if the child's in danger or if you have some type of justification for it. Is that
correct?
So possibly in this situation you could say there's some justification
correct.
For not complying with the judgment because of the 785 day absence.
Correct. And but our, at least for our courts over in St. Tammany Parish, the question would then become you had a right to then modify it, so why didn't you if you haven't done that?
So the advice would be if you have some justification, immediately go back to court.
I would.
And ask for the court to modify it in accordance with the new
circumstances. I would. And if you feel like your kids are in danger, I'm never comfortable telling someone don't follow a judgment, but there's a practical way and then there's a legal way.
Right. Okay. We've got another text. It says my 2016 Ford F-150 King Ranch has been to the dealership with major engine issues for 42 days today. The problem is apparently a Ford issue and was, and sounds like,
it's a Ford issue.
And so the text is, does the Lemon Law apply? And the Lemon Law basically states that if you buy a new car and there's some type of problem that substantially impairs the use or it doesn't conform with an express warranty, it could be subject to the Lemon Law. But in order to be eligible under the Lemon Law, it has to have two things. One, the car has to be serviced out of service for 90 days, or that you had to bring it in four times within the first year of purchase. Hmm. If you have that criteria, then you may be subject to either having the car car returned, or being paid for the diminished value of the vehicle. So if it's a brand new car and it's been out of service for 90 days and you've had to bring it back at least four times, and the problem is substantially impairs the use of the vehicle, it's not something that's, you know, cosmetic, but not, right, you know, it doesn't impair its functioning, or it doesn't conform to express warranty, you would be subject to the Lemon Law.
I'm assuming this guy with a major engine issue would.
Yeah. But you got to bring it, you got to give him four opportunities to try to fix it. So you have to get, you just can't say one time, I want a new car. Give them four opportunities, and once they do that, you should be subject to the Lemon Law.
Gotcha.
All right, we got to solve a political text.
Ooh.
Let's. It was talking about the children at the border.
It?
Yeah, you want to read it?
Okay, it says, Doug, I commented. Oh, I'm sorry, wrong one. Hang on. Where was it? Oh, maybe you could say something about what I just heard about Bernie Sanders, who said the U.S. doesn't take children away from their parents, and that's not exactly true, because the U.S. absolutely does take children away from the parents of people who are accused of a crime, and these people, having crossed the border illegally, are accused of a crime.
So, I mean, in the legal sense, if a parent gets a DWI with a child.
Correct, and I've had that issue before. The state has, you know, in my case, the state came in, did a child in need of care, took the children under state custody because the parents were accused of a crime, and it wasn't the first DWI, it was the third. And so what the state looks at is these children are in harm's way by being with the parents. So they had to be taken from them. I guess you could apply that same reasoning to, if these parents are crossing the border illegally and their children are in danger, does the state does the U.S. have the standing or the right to take them away and make sure that they are cared for?
Yes. And also, I think one other interesting issue about the border issue with the children, and this is just from a legal perspective, I'm not making any political commentary, but that's been the same policy since the early 1990s. So draw whatever conclusions you want to draw from that, but this is not new as far as the border is concerned. This is the same law, same policy, and same law that's been since the early 1990s. So, right. you can make your own conclusions after that.
This text. And when I'm practicing law, and a lot of times doing family law, it's not just the law. You know, it's social issues. And I'm always very cognizant to say that's way above my pay grade. Anything that is not, I don't know, is above my pay grade. And so somebody just commented, LOL, above your pay grade. That's probably a social worker at about 1/50th of your pay grade. Yeah, unfortunately, they might not get what they're entitled to. I know the social workers we use in the court system, you know, they get a decent hourly rate because our clients are paying for them.
All right.
And this guy texted back. He said, what I meant was that the parent who is being charged with the crime is forcefully, if necessarily, separated from the family.
And that was your point.
That was my point.
That was your point. There you go. All right, got one other text. If you are working a job and you're owed commissions, and then when you are terminated, you're not paid your commissions, what is your remedy? And that's for J.A., who texts us on Facebook. Basically, if you earned a commission prior to your termination of employment or separation, at the time of separation, the employer is required to pay it. Now, if after notice is provided to the employer that the commission has been earned and they don't pay, they can be liable for some huge damages. They can be liable for the commission, 90 days pay, and attorney's fees. So those sanctions are very, very strong because they want to encourage employers not to hold money that they're entitled, that their employees are entitled to after they separate from employment. Now, when you have commissions, often there's a lot of the litigations about whether the commissions were actually earned. You might have like a industrial salesperson who started a sale, then he was fired and it was closed by a new salesman. And so there's a question as to whether they earned the commissions or not. Now, one of the things you do is you go back to the employee handbook to define, see if it's defined there. If it's not defined there, then you look at how the company treated prior situations that had the same similar facts. Or was the sale substantially closed at the time of termination and that the closing of the sale, was the remainder of the closing was just a formality? But under either scenario, if you're owed money at the time of termination of employment, there's a very, very strong sanction for employers who receive notice and do not pay, and they're in bad faith. So a lot of times we've had situations where someone has owed a $500 or $600 commission, and then the employer end up paying $15,000 to $20,000 in penalties and attorney's fees because they didn't pay that commission. So when you're an employer and you get that letter, deal with it quickly because it could really blow up on you. And also, too, it's a good idea for employers to have those policies in place in their handbook so that there's no confusion.
Right.
So there you go, J.A. You can follow us on Facebook. We're streaming live and on our Facebook pages or Nico and Sinceri Facebook page, and you can text and you will see. Oh, we just got the text for J.A. He said the sales were closed. So if the sale will close, you're entitled to your commissions. And if you have to write a letter, or attorney writes a letter saying, hey, you better pay them, or you can be liable for 90 days' wages, the commissions, and attorney's fees. So there you go. All right. Well, let's take a break. Doug Sinceri, Michelle Demers Sinceri, All Things Legal. We'll be right back after this brief timeout. We're back. Doug Sinceri, Michelle Demers Sinceri, All Things Legal. Salva. Man, it's hot, huh? This is like we're in the throes of summer now.
Well, yeah, when we're leaving the house this morning, I was like, is it always this hot? I think our brains don't remember.
And we leave up north. I mean, we come from up north in Madisonville. So, yes, it's that. And you know what? You can check us out streaming on Facebook. I always say that when you're in a show because people don't really want to wake up and look at Albert in the morning all the time on Sunday mornings. But I think it's pretty cool with you.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
So we can, and also, you can call us at law firm at 504-837-1304, 504-837-1304 on the North Shore.
985-624-9697.
See, what we do is we try to make the complex understandable. Huh?
Right.
That's when you got De La Salle education, that's what you do. You take the complex.
You are really good at doing that, though. You're really good at making things easy to understand.
And you know what else I haven't done yet? I haven't said got. Remember, you've been on me saying, I got this, and you say.
You have. God is a past tense.
Is a past tense. I know. So thank you. You know who else thanks you?
Who?
Mr. Donald Stabler, my eighth grade teacher at De La Salle, who's the most fantastic English teacher in the history of mankind. And De La Salle had him, much like most of the great teachers in the city at that time.
Gotcha.
Mr. Stabler. Oh, you said gotcha. Have you?
No, I got that.
That was past tense.
That was past tense. Yeah, we'll have a lesson on that.
We'll have a lesson?
Yeah.
Do we have any more texts we want to go to? Oh, yeah.
Send that a postmaster here. It's because they come backwards.
The guy with the commission keeps texting us back there. He said it was a $10,000 commission.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that would be good to go after. All right, let's talk a little bit about estates. Now, we're starting to come across, and we wrote a little article more on special needs trust.
Right.
And it's an interesting phenomenon because I don't know if it's something in the water and the vaccines or what, but there seems to be a lot of children who are becoming adults now, who have neurological issue, ADHD, autism, Asperger, you know, those type of conditions. And parents are very concerned on what's going to happen to my child, adult, you know, my adult child when I'm gone.
Right.
And estate planning is very, very important for that because they have something called special needs trust that can be used to either save money for a child or when you pass money down to your child with a challenge, that they can have the benefit of that money but still receive any type of government services they're entitled to.
Right.
Because a lot of times if you might inherit a very modest amount of money, $5,000-$10,000, and you have some type of, if you have an adult child with a special need, you lose those government benefits, and then you have to show the government you spent the money that was inherited was spent. And then after you do that, you have to get back on the line, but back in the back of the line maybe for a waiver program or something like that. It might be, some people are saying it's 8 years before you can get back the services that you lost on the like, for example, for the waiver program.
Right. And we're also doing it more because if you have adult children or you have a child who's a major, but they fall under the definition of disability in Louisiana for child support, and they're getting government benefits, but the parent could be made to pay child support. If you open up a special needs trust and the child support's paid into that special needs trust, it doesn't knock you out of your benefits.
Now, one thing I wanted to talk to you is that is that there's a new Louisiana law saying that you can pay child support for a disabled child or a child with some type of disability over the age of 18. Is that correct?
Correct. Well, child support can be paid over the age of 18.
Yeah.
You know, it can be 19 unless you've graduated from high school. Well, but there's now, yeah. So it right. can be a child with they have to fall under the definition of disabled under Louisiana. But they can be made, you know, both parents can be held to pay child support. It's a child's claim. It's not either parent's claim unless the parent's the tutor. But yeah, so you can be held to pay child support for the life of a disabled child.
Which is fairly new in Louisiana.
Mm-hmm. Fairly new.
And again, a lot of times when you're in that situation, you want to have a special needs trust to be the recipient of that child support so they may not lose out on some government services.
Correct.
So it's a whole new issue. And I might tell you a little observation I have about parents of children with special needs just as far as their lifespan.
Yeah.
I saw they did this informally, but we go on the news and at 31, and so we're going to have a CBS update, and we're going to have local news, and we'll be back in 4 minutes for the last half an hour of All Things Legal. So stay tuned. We're back. Doug Cinceri, Michelle Demers Cinceri, All Things Legal. Another half an hour until I guess just sports, and so we're. Let's go to phone lines.
Okay.
You want to go to phone lines?
Yeah, sure.
Let's go to
great.
Kim. Got a question regarding child separation. Hey, Kim, yes. You're on All Things Legal.
Hey, how y'all doing today?
Good. What you got for us?
You know, about the separation of children, and, you know, Roe versus Wade was a legal mm-hmm. issue. But since 1973, they, you know, 57 million children have been aborted.
Mm-hmm.
And now, you know, they talking about separating the kids, parents at the border, and, you know, but nothing is mentioned about that. And it's just mind-boggling that, you know, these children aren't being aborted. They're being taken care of, and, you know, we're trying to reunite them with their parents. Their objective is not to separate the children from the parents.
Yeah.
Like it was in 1973 with Roe versus Wade.
Well, yeah.
That's all I got to say.
Yeah, well, thanks for the call, Kim. And, you know, I think one of the things, and we're not going to get a political debate, but one of the things about Roe versus Wade is the question was when the founders were contemplating the Bill of Rights and the protections, was that act a protected act by the federal government? Or was it left to the states? And, you know, inexplicably, they said somehow when the founders were sitting around in Philadelphia, they intended to have abortion as a protected right under the Constitution, or that's been surmised through years and years. And I think that's the issue now is, I think you see it's like a pendulum back and forth. And the question is, you know, what is the Constitution? Is it something that's evolving, or is it something that's more static and saying these are our rights and they're not, you know, they're not bendable? And or to what extent are they subject to interpretation? So I think when you're talking about, I don't want to make it a political issue. I mean, we have very strong beliefs, but we're not going to talk about it today. Is that, you know, does the government, you know, like they've had recent issues, is it protected by the federal government or not, or is it left to the states?
Well, the problem is they want the government to step in when they want the government to step
That's
in,
right.
And they want them to back up when they don't. And so, like I always tell my client, remember, what's good for the goose is good for the gander. If you want it, there are unintended consequences of every action.
And that's, you know, I think this is an interesting debate. One criticism of the legislature is there's too many lawyers. And I think the other side of the coin is you need a lot of lawyers in the legislature because there's a lot of laws that are put into place that they have unintended consequences that sound good, they're feel-good measures, and there's a good purpose they're trying to address. But a lot of times when you have laws that are put into place, there are unintended consequences that occur that outweigh the benefit of the law.
Right.
And, you know, again, when you're talking about, I think, which is very interesting to watch the next couple of years as far as the Supreme Court, and especially if there's a new Supreme Court justice that's put on, one who retires, is to what extent is the Supreme Court going to follow the Constitution, or are they going to sort of say, you know, this is the 21st century. You know, the founders were out of touch, and they really don't understand they don't understand how things work in the 21st century. So we're going to make our own dicta. We're going to make our own law. We're going to make our own interpretation as to what we think the founders would have thought in the 21st century. And I think that debate is always occurring. And to to what extent do you, I guess, confer additional rights to the, to certain activities, issues, or whether the states are, you know, best left to make those decisions. So, that's just an interesting interesting perspective of what's going to happen without getting into a political debate. So I tell you what, let's take a break right now, and we'll be right back on All Things Legal with Doug Cinceri, Michelle Demarest Cinceri. We'll be right back after this brief timeout. We're back. Doug Cinceri, Michelle Demarest Cinceri, All Things Legal. Right back. We got a couple of texts, and we're talking about the legislature and lawyers. I don't want to get in a big political debate. I'm just sort of expressing, you know, why it's good sometimes to have lawyers in the legislature. Said good and honest lawyers like you in the legislature. Yes, I guess. But we have too many self-serving, greedy trial lawyers in the legislature. So there, you know, that's a different point of view.
That is a different point of view.
You know, now this, lawyers, honest lawyers. Now that was a concept, and I want to sort of get to that. So, because we always catch a little grief for being lawyers. But, you know, I like
always a lot of grief.
I like good lawyers jokes.
Yeah, I do too.
Okay, I got one for you. What do you throw to a drowning lawyer? No. Even better.
Dave set an anchor. What?
Dave set an anchor. His partners.
I like that.
You like that one. So they got this.
You know what's funny too? It's because I grew up in a family of lawyers, and so even though there's a bunch of jokes, I love what I do, and I'm proud of what we do.
Yeah, I know. Well, I think people have a lot of times they have a certain opinion of lawyers until they need one.
Right.
And then it sort of changes when they have one.
And look, just like any other profession, there are good ones and there are bad ones. Mm-hmm. You know.
Well, you know, okay, let's talk about this, lawyers. Now, in family law and estate matters,
mm-hmm.
we're not only lawyers, we're also part psychiatrists, psychologists, negotiator, social workers. Because, you know, let me, like in an estate matter, when you have siblings fighting, much like you would in a family law matter, and siblings who have had in their DNA, they've had distress, they've had disputes, they've had, it's been part of their family life. It's part of who they are and their conflict with their siblings. And then you're in court. You know, you have a couple of layers you have to deal with. Like before, like, you know, when you're splitting up a succession, it's really about money.
Mm-hmm.
It's about how you split up the money, who gets credits, who doesn't get credits, who's entitled to what. But a lot of times before you could even get to that, you have to deal with the emotional overlay of the family that's fighting. And it's interesting, you know, a lot of times when we're trying to settle this, we're dealing with things that have nothing to do with the litigation, but have to do with a family history that is spilling into the court system.
Right. And unlike in family law, which you're dealing with the emotions of the husband and the wife or the mother and the father, in estate work, you can have 10 of them, 10 siblings, or, you know, you have more of a dynamic rather than just two having two angry parents.
And it takes a little different skill, because what I found is this, is that when it comes down to it, when you have an estate fight, it's not about the money. I mean, in fact, the estate fight is causing all the parties to have less money because the process is eating it up. But really what the process is about is, or what's the purpose of it is, to hurt the other sibling, to inflict pain on the other sibling, to continue the conflict with the other sibling. And what happens is when you are in a estate fight, all the parties are there involuntarily. And so therefore, since they're there involuntarily, when you have like a emotional punch or you have some type of conflict, they cannot withdraw from the situation voluntarily without settling the estate. And so that's part of the dynamics that is a lot different as far as trying to deal with it. It's not only being a lawyer, understanding the law, understanding, you know, allocation of the proceeds of the estate. It's like, what do you do with this family? And how do you get them on the same page? Because a lot of times what we do, and I'll tell you, when we settle these cases, what we try to do is we might have a status conference with the judge, and we'll tell the judge, he said, look, these families are not on the same page. If we come to a settlement, we want it read all onto the record, because as soon as they step out the courthouse, they're going to change their mind.
Right.
Because the purpose isn't to resolve things. The purpose is to continue the fight.
Right. And a lot of times when you resolve it, then you're cutting it off, and then you no longer have a forum or a platform to spew your emotions. And unfortunately, that's a lot of people.
But I think it's, you know, especially for, you know, there's a whole group of lawyers who are graduating who are going to start studying for the bar exam, which is wisdom in dealing with personalities, wisdom in hearing people's grievances and trying to figure out how to navigate all these difficult emotional issues to get to a resolution or a solution.
Yeah.
And so that, you know, that's a different component of maybe estate work. Because a lot of times if you have two businessmen who are splitting up a business and they're savvy businessmen, it's really just about the money.
Right.
It's about how to do it in the most efficient way that both parties can live with. And but if you have that emotional component to it, it really adds. And that's why if you're a blended family or you have – you know, every family has difficulties. I haven't met the Brady Bunch yet. Have you?
No.
I mean, every family has some underlying personal dynamics that makes things unique. And that's why it's so important to have a will, because if you have a will that specifically specifies exactly what you want to have occur after you're gone, it minimizes the parameters for possible dispute.
Right. And, you know, we started putting in ours is a dispute clause that if there is a dispute and an heir disputes, they're out.
They're out.
You're out.
Right.
You don't play fair. You're not going to follow my wishes. You're going to fight my wishes. You're out. And so that, I always think that's a good thing to at least talk with your attorney about. Is that a good provision to put in? It's interesting. You were talking about a lot of it being social issues. And I was just thinking, you know, these young lawyers that are coming out of school, You know, this generation is much different than we are. But what is very interesting is the law isn't different. And I'm teaching a co-parenting class that I started for St. Tammany Parish. And I'm in week two, and one of the co-parents is, they're younger, they're still in college, and she is understanding that, and she's the one who labeled herself this, not myself. She said, my snowflake generation has a difficult time in this court system because we're realizing the way that we do things is not the way that's in the right interest of our kids for co-parenting, and it's not going to get us anywhere in this legal system. And I thought that was a very telling thing for this young girl, and she understood what the world and what her generation is used to, but really that when you get out in the world and you put on your big girl panties and you're in the world, that's just not really going to work.
That is one of your favorite sayings.
I know.
Put on your big girl panties.
Yeah.
And so there you go. You even tell some of your male clients that when they're whining, huh?
Only me and them alone.
All right, let's go to Ken. He's got a question regarding power of attorney. Hey, Ken, you on all things legal with Doug Cinceri and Michelle Demers Cinceri.
Good morning. I was calling about my brother, who is now on life support, who intended to give, who was ill and knew he was struggling, was going to give my brother power of attorney, but he never did give him the papers, and we can't find the papers, and
right.
He's incapable of managing his affairs, right. At least in the short term. What's the process or procedure to get someone appointed to handle that?
You have to do an interdiction proceeding. You want to...
Oh, yeah. So that's why we always tell our clients, get a power of attorney before you need it, because if you do not have a power of attorney, the only remedy is to start interdiction proceedings, and you'll have to file a matter with the court. And what happens is then the interdict, or your brother, who would be considered the interdict, would be appointed an attorney, and the attorney would kind of step in on his behalf, and the court would have to determine whether your brother lost the legal capacity, whether he has a legal capacity, and if he's lost it.
Well, he's on life support. He's not even conscious. So
You still have to go through the process. It's still a process. So it might be a quicker process, but it is a process. You'll have to file a petition for interdiction.
And
it's a lot more expensive.
Yeah. How do those, that's what I was thinking, how do those costs get covered if able to write a check or do anything?
If the interdiction's granted, then the person who's interdicted to the state will pay for it, get reimbursed. Whoever puts out the money to process the interdiction, if it's one of the family members and the interdiction's granted in favor of that person, then they get the money back from the estate.
Okay. Now, this is a weird question, but should he miraculously recover and regain?
Then the interdiction would no longer be necessary and could be terminated if he does have the cognitive capacity to manage his own estate.
But then all of the costs of the interdiction, if that happened before the interdiction was completed?
No, if the interdiction was granted, then the person who filed for the interdiction would have the ability to get it back.
Okay, and how long is that process?
Well, it could be anywhere from 2 months to a year.
2 months to a year?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Because you have to have a court, you have to have a hearing.
Ask our former owner of the Saints about that.
Yeah, well, he told me he was going to see an attorney and getting power of attorney to my brother and changing his will. But
I think that underscores the importance, as Michelle said, to get it before you need it. But thanks for the call. Let's go to Mary. She's got a will question. Hey, Mary, you on All Things Legal with Doug Cinceri, Michelle Demers Cinceri.
Yes, good morning.
Thank you
for taking my call. My father died about 20 years ago. I only discovered that he had a will. So on the will, he left the house and the contents to my sister and I, excluding my two other siblings. But that's not the point. Does it include the property that the house was on, because the house has been demolished? So does that cover the property also?
Yes.
That's the question.
Yeah, because the house, it does.
So the house and contents includes the property.
Yes.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for that answer.
All right. Thanks for calling. Let's go to a break. Doug Cinceri, Michelle Demers Cinceri, All Things Legal. We'll be right back for our final segment after this brief time out. We're back. Doug Cinceri, Michelle Demers Cinceri, All Things Legal. We won't be able to take call because on a tree issue, you call next week or call early because Albert's not here either.
Yeah, he's our tree expert.
I think he's this morning he's writing on his book on Treatise on Trees.
There you go.
So, Bobby, give us a call next week. But you can call us also at a law firm. On a tree issue, you call Albert at 504-837-1304, and Michelle on the North Shore.
985-624-9697.
So if, you know, I'm waiting for the book. He's got several chapters to it on how to deal with trees hanging over neighbor's property. So.
And I want to address a text, and gotcha. I'm very cognizant and very forthright about what I don't know. This person has sent two texts about a NOLA speeding camera tickets. Can they be sent to collection agency for non-payment, or is that against Louisiana law? I don't know the answer to that. I don't think they can do it because you haven't contracted. It's not a legal obligation, but I'm not quite sure.
Yeah,
that's kind of my first thought. So I'm not quite sure, Aaron. I'm sorry, I don't know the answer.
That's all right. We don't know it all.
Yeah.
Even with Google, we don't know it all.
That's right.
So there you go. All right. So thanks for waking up this morning. And I appreciate it, Michelle.
You're welcome.
And we'll be back next week on All Things Legal, 8 to 10. Be good and be blessed. Stay tuned for Just Sports. See you next week.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s. And each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.